Hello and what is happening, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and we've got an exclusive episode today after a lovely note was sent along by the Napa Valley Vintners. This was sent along actually today as I'm recording this. This is Monday, July 9th, and it is all about new labeling requirements and as it pertains to nutrition and ingredient labeling guidance. This is also coming from the California Wine Institute, some information from them. It's going to be such a good topic to dive into. I'm so excited because this is something that we have really gone in hard on over the last year of doing the show. And this is, I think, something that is going to be great moving forward. It is applying directly to the EU, the European Union. So this is not yet something that is taking off in the United States, but we will see what happens in the future. Before we get too far into this, as always, thank you all so much for subscribing, for downloading, for listening to the show. Please continue to do so and share it with all of your wine-loving friends. Please follow us on our social networks. We are most active on Instagram and YouTube. That's at MTGA Wines. You can also find us on the social network formerly known as Twitter, as well as the Book of Face. A little less active on those, but feel free to check them out for regular updates of what we're doing around the winery and the cellar and just fun things that we have going on. You can also head to our website, that's mtgawines.com. That'll sign you up for our newsletter, give you a little bit more information on who we are, what we do. You can also submit questions for our monthly Q&A episodes anytime you'd like through our DMs, through any of those social networks, as well as going to our website. Scroll down to the bottom, there's a little email form that you can fill out to submit them and get them answered by yours truly at the end of each month. All right, let's dive into this, shall we? Let's start with a little bit of a background, because I think that's where we need to start. For any of you that might be new to the show, we have talked a lot about wine additives, wine ingredients, over the last year and a half of doing the Wind Up podcast. If you would like, you can go back and listen to two episodes in particular. You can listen to part one, our wine additives episode that came out last year. And shortly thereafter, I did just a good old opinion piece, kind of the winemaker's perspective on these additives shortly thereafter. So you can listen to both those to give you a little background on what some of these substances are that can be utilized in wine and in winemaking. You can also hear my thoughts on some of those and where I really think some lines need to be drawn. This notice that we got from the Napa Valley Vintners and this update from the EU is something that I am very excited about. We had an amazing time in the cellar this last weekend with some friends from Atlanta. Shout out to you all. It was a blast just talking shop. We were out there for a solid like 2.5 hours talking about stuff like this. And it's just so serendipitous that this is kind of the news that we get on a Monday morning as to start the week. And it's something that we've talked about with many friends and colleagues in the cellar. You know, why is it that there are hundreds of different things that can be utilized in winemaking and in alcohol production? And why is it not required of us to disclose that to you, the consumer? Because that's the reality as it stands right now today, is that you can have a heavily processed wine with a bunch of additives and things thrown into it to make it be a certain way, and that winery doesn't have to tell you about it at all. In fact, we get emails regularly as winemakers. We get solicited by laboratories, by other companies, asking us to use their products to, quote, enhance our wines. And by the way, they advertise it as saying, hey, these are things that you don't have to disclose. You don't have to do it. You can just put this in your wine, and just a friendly reminder, with this lovely product you're adding, you don't have to tell anybody. Your secret is safe. You can maintain the air of, you know, luxury and pomp and circumstance and this in this high-end product, knowing full well that it's the equivalent of a Big Mac. And it pisses us off. Well, maybe not us. I won't use the royal us in terms of everyone in the industry, because there's plenty of people that are thoroughly on board with using some of this stuff. But for many of us, myself included, this has been a soapbox for me. It's something that makes me furious that people are willing to dupe you, the consumer, into thinking, hey, we're making this great high-end product when it's this, just chock full of additives and sugar and nonsense that wouldn't be there had it not been for a decision to tweak the chemistry and the color and the flavor and the aromatic profiles of these wines. It doesn't have to be this way. And this is something that this information is just, it's fantastic. For those that would like a little bit more information on this specific announcement, as well as some of the approved wine additives, specifically for the EU, because that's what this article does, does kind of reference. I've thrown those links into the description of the video, so feel free to pause at any time, check them out. Feel free to read to your heart's desire. There's a great kind of just PDF, Q&A on how this information needs to be disclosed. We'll go through it here very, very quickly, but feel free to, peruse this in more detail at your leisure. It's a very basic FAQ document. This was actually something that was put together at the end of April and is now really starting to kind of make the rounds, it appears. When it comes to labeling things, obviously there's a lot that can be done, whether it's just written on the label or printed on the labels that are going onto these wine bottles. The EU is allowing the use of electronic labels in the forms of like a QR code that takes you to a dedicated web page. But the things that producers are going to have to start referencing is, hey, what's the calorie count for this beverage? How much fat, saturated fat, carbohydrates, sugars, very important, protein and salts. This is the kind of stuff that must be included in this declaration of ingredients. On top of that, if you are using any additives and ingredients, they need to be labeled as such. They need to be labeled as ingredients, and you have to list them in essence in the, the one you use that's of the most volume starts at the top, and then anything that's less and less and less in terms of the volume used, you just add it as you go. So you have that laundry list of stuff that you've utilized in your winemaking. This is something that I think is not surprising. For those that don't know, the EU is typically much more strict in terms of ingredients, calorie counts, what actually goes into cosmetics and produce and beverages and food and things of that nature. So, this is something that realistically was probably going to be coming down the pipeline no matter what. And I think it's a great thing to set the tone for other countries, other states within a place like the US, and say, like, hey, this is stuff that realistically needs to be known. We can no longer let this beverage industry be regulated by tax agencies that don't give a shit about what actually goes into those beverages. To give you a little background on that, this is something I probably mentioned before in our episode. However, this is something that you should be aware of. And this is a part of the topic of conversation that I had with these folks out of the winery over the weekend, was that the wine industry and the alcohol industries in general are not regulated by the FDA. The Food and Drug Administration actually has nothing to do with how we operate. There are some of us that try to abide by some of their rules and regulations because we use, sugar-free verbiage in the description of some of our wines on our website. And that's something that we link to the FDA site and their ruling of like, hey, this is what sugar-free actually means. For those that don't know, it's typically half a gram of sugar per serving. That's the regulation. We try and stay well below that, and I mean well below that for our own wines. And other people do as well, although they might not label it as such. It's something we've tried to make a habit of doing, but that's just us. Instead of being regulated by that alphabet agency, which typically handles anything food and beverage related, we are regulated by the Trade Tax Bureau. It was formerly known as the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. They had a rebranding somewhere back in the day, but the name doesn't matter. What's important is that it's simply a tax agency. For every gallon of alcohol we produce, we have to pay a certain excise tax to this agency to say, hey, based on this alcohol percentage, we have to cut you a check. Plain and simple. It's simply a taxation agency. They don't give two shits about what actually is in that bottle other than the percentage of alcohol so that they can collect our money efficiently. That's all they're there for. They are the ones that we have to submit our labels. They do require us to have an approved label through this federal agency. So every single label of wine, very typically, will have to have a COLA, we call it, that is approved by them that says, hey, you can actually sell this labeled product because we approve of the label and it has all the required information on there that we say needs to be on there. However, ingredients doesn't have to be there. It's something that's, you know, omitted. It's not something that they're worried about. It's not something that's been a consideration. There have been a handful of wineries who have labeled their ingredients. Ridge is probably the shining example because they are a larger producer. They're also a very premier producer. There's something, a place with a lot of history, a great pedigree, and it's something that they do on their wines, is they let you know, like, hey, here's what we utilized in our winemaking. But for any of us, whether it's them or any other wine producer in the US, it's completely voluntary. We do not need to do it. And what's interesting is that, oddly enough, when wineries have tried to do it, sometimes they actually see a dip in sales and popularity, and they take a business hit because of that decision. So that was the trend for some time. That being said, you know, times have changed a little bit, and perhaps, you know, those of us who are starting to provide this information to you, the wine drinkers around the country, are starting to see this actually make a difference in consumer purchasing and whether or not a wine actually leaves the shelf of a store, because you can actually figure out exactly what's going into that wine. It has been a huge soapbox for me and many of us as small producers in the industry who really rely on the artistry of winemaking, not relying on science and extracts and additives and enzymes to create and manufacture something. We are frankly fed up of knowing what some producers do and what they're basically forcing down your throat, unbeknownst to you. We're tired of it. And to see something like this come through the Wine Institute, that the EU is starting to crack down and say, like, hey, we need to know these things, it's music to my ears. I love it. I absolutely love it. Because the amount of times I run into folks like yourselves out there listening to the show who are tired. Number one, it's intimidating. Wine's intimidating enough. It's tough to go in a wine shop unless you're really, really into wine and have an idea of what you're looking at on the shelf, right? We've all been there. Shoot, it happens to me. I've been in the industry here in Napa for, 32, 33 years. And I still get intimidated looking at a wine list, going into a retail shop and trying to figure out which way is up. And if us wine professionals can't tell what the hell's going on the shelf, how are you expected to do that, right? It's one of the main reasons why we as a wine making company have started to disclose a lot of this information. Starting with any wine being bottled this year, we are putting a QR code that in essence is doing a lot of what this document that you can click on in the link in the description. We're doing just that, where we have a webpage dedicated to all of our wines, where you can drill down from our white wines to our reds, some of our smaller batch stuff, and you can really figure out exactly what we're doing from the winemaking side of things. It's completely voluntary. We're not required to do that in any way, shape, or form, but because we're sick and tired of dealing with both producers, big and small, throwing a bunch of bullshit into their wines to make them be a certain way, we felt it behooved us to do this. To be transparent, to give you some power and some education to understand exactly what's going on here in this industry. I'm going to be on my soapbox probably for the rest of this episode, and it's going to start with this statement, which might get me in some trouble somewhere. But the more people fight this, the more people just nonchalantly shrug off the use of some of these substances, it makes me feel as though winemakers today are just lazy. They're just lazy. Because the reality is, if you actually try to make high quality wine using a limited amount of ingredients, we're talking maybe just the grapes themselves, maybe you can actually get a non-GMO cultured yeast that's actually bred within the lab, not just created, you can do that. You might use a low dose of sulfites, but guess what? If you're not eating or drinking 100% certified organic produce and food and beverage at all times, you're consuming sulfites somewhere along the line. They're ubiquitous. They're in everything as a preservative. They're an antioxidant and a preservative. They're everywhere. But they do have to be labeled in wine. That's a whole nother conversation for another day. But we'll get into it down the line. That was also addressed in that additive episode I referenced at the beginning. I think that over the last 20 years, it's been amazing to see science and technology around wine grow. I was asked at the winery last weekend, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it was roughly like, hey, do you think your grandfather, when he started making wine, wanted to make it, you know, as honestly as possible with as few ingredients as possible? Was that like a conscious decision of his, or was that just how it was done? And unfortunately, I can't ask him. He passed away back in 2016. But I'm of the opinion that, based on the wines I've tried of his, that's just how it was done. You didn't rely on all this other nonsense. You didn't rely on a bunch of enzymes. You didn't to add to your wine to help get certain phenolic compounds to be released to increase the concentration of certain flavors and aromas. You didn't necessarily add something like mega purple or mega red, a cheap concentrate that's used to adjust the sweetness in a wine or even the color in a wine. You didn't use dimethyl dicarbonate for filtering and fining because you didn't have to. You were making a stable product, something that was high quality that you didn't have to use the Death Star to blow up everything inside of it to make sure it was shelf stable. And by the way, that dimethyl dicarbonate is used in a lot of beverages, not just wine. And for the record, is something I will never use in my winemaking, period. You can go back to that additive episode to find out a little bit more about that substance in particular. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole just yet. These are all things that may have been available in certain, you know, situations in the 80s and especially into the 90s and definitely the 2000s. But as far as I can tell, and I might be wrong on this, I might be wrong. As far as I can tell, historically, that's not how wines were made. Now, back in ancient times, you know, we're talking Greek Roman Empire, you definitely had things more like mulled or spiced wines because the natural fermentations that would occur with this juice made these wines taste like butt. And they needed other stuff to make it taste halfway decent. And hell, it was safer to drink them in the water back then, so you might as well give it a little bit of flavor or something. And as time went on and winemaking grew and it became more of an art and a beverage for enjoyment, a beverage of royalty, and eventually something that, you know, is lauded above, you know, different alcoholic beverages for whatever reason. Like, we try not to be that hoity-toity, but some people are. Looking at you, sommeliers, sheesh. Although Cicerones get pretty geeky about their beer too, so let's not kid ourselves. You know, I think it got to a point where, and maybe I'm just romanticizing it, maybe I'm just a little nostalgic of thinking like how these wines are crafted, you know, back in the, you know, 1970s, 1960s, and before, when stainless steel wasn't even a thing. You know, it was just gentlemen farmers, you know, making these beautiful elixirs that enhanced food and company and just became a beautiful part of everyday life. You know, maybe I'm just looking through, you know, to the past with these rose-colored glasses. But I don't think a winery, depending on the size of it and the scale of it, needs to be using any of these additives if they don't want to. I don't think winemakers have to. You know, we attend a lot of seminars, a lot of conferences, a lot of meetings regarding these things, and there are a lot of people that use this stuff. And I don't know why. You know, they typically say that, well, it enhances and it works for our program. We're looking for certain, you know, phenolic compounds and flavors and aromas in our wines, and this enzyme helps us extract more of that more efficiently, so we can ensure that it is, you know, the wine that we want to be making. Some producers are just so big that they're trying to make Coke or Pepsi. They need their wine to taste the same no matter what. Doesn't matter what vineyard they're sourcing from. It does not matter what Mother Nature and the farming conditions are for that particular year. They need it to taste like their wine. And you, the consumer, need to know it's that wine based on that flavor profile. Guess what? You don't do that on a mass scale without a little bit of food science involved, without some of these extracts and additives and finding techniques and filtering and tweaking the color and all this stuff. Like, it's made in a lab. That's fine. It was great talking with this group on Saturday because my comparison was like, you know what? Every once in a while, I enjoy Taco Bell. Sue me. I love a Crunchwrap Supreme, and those Doritos Locos tacos are damn delicious. All right? They're delicious. I know full well that everything that comes out of that fast food joint, much and every other fast food joint for that matter, is heavily processed. It has to be able to produce that much food at that scale, that quickly and efficiently. We've all been in a drive-thru where it's taken more than 7 minutes to get your meal, and you're like, man, this is taking forever. It's impressive. It's amazing what science and technology and food and beverage processing has done over the last, you know, 50 years. But there's also a reason why somewhere around the early 70s, you see a huge spike in obesity, diabetes, all these other conditions. Like, you see stuff start to happen. And I think some of the haters will be like, oh, well, it's, you know, it's a correlation, but we can't prove that this is causing it. I'm like, well, at what point does a correlation start to make that shift and to be like, hey, this is actually causation here? And I don't think it's any surprise that the more things have become processed, the more additives and extracts and preservatives and things that have been used over the last 50 years, I don't think it's any surprise that you see some of the health issues that we experience in mass today. And this kind of stuff applies to the wine industry too. This isn't just about fast food. This isn't just about going down to the Walmart or the Safeway and buying food off the shelf or buying your thing of Gatorade or Sunny D or whatever the case is. It's about everything. And I think it's about time that wine started playing ball. And so when you get this news on a Monday morning, it's exciting. It's like, holy shit, it makes sense. And I'm going to be hard-pressed to be convinced otherwise. There's no reason why you, the consumer, should be left in the dark not knowing what's actually going into this beverage you're consuming. Every other beverage has this. Everything that's not alcohol has some table of contents and ingredients and a calorie count and something associated with it. Why shouldn't wine? I mean, shoot. This is something we're seeing more and more and more in the industry, is kind of this neo-prohibitionist movement, that there is a huge movement away from alcohol, that abstinence from it is the only good thing, that you should not be consuming alcohol in any way, shape, or form. And I disagree with it, because realistically, I think that people need to be able to make their own damn decisions. And if you enjoy a glass of red wine at the end of the day, you should be able to enjoy a glass of red wine at the end of the day. in the same light, you probably shouldn't drink two bottles by yourself. And you shouldn't be trying to produce wine to achieve that goal. Okay? Maybe take it easy every once in a while. I'll tell you right now, on this Monday morning, yesterday we had a great brunch day. We hung out by a little kiddie pool in the backyard. It was very, very delightfully redneck here at the Anderson household with a bunch of friends. We probably, between six or seven of us, we crushed. I mean, we probably went through seven or eight bottles of wine over the course of an entire day. It was very indulgent. We went a little hard. Probably should have not done that on a Sunday. But guess what? We had a lot of fun. Are we feeling it a little bit today? You betcha. Am I been drinking a whole lot of water and some electrolytes? You betcha. Am I going to go to the gym later or tomorrow to make sure that I'm getting a good workout in and trying to counteract some of the stuff that I put my body through on Sunday? Yeah, you bet your ass I am. I'm trying to take care of myself, and that's what anybody should do when consuming anything that might potentially be detrimental. And you shouldn't be doing that all the time. I mean, we've all been there. It's okay to turn it on every once in a while, I would say. Live a little, have some fun. You don't want to be necessarily like Tom Brady, you only have two almonds and like a strawberry every once in a while. Maybe let loose and put your hair down every once in a while. Or don't. That's totally up to you. But if we are going to really start talking about the consumption of alcohol in that way, where it's something that should be avoided at all costs, you know what? Maybe we should start letting people know exactly what's going into those wines? And be like, hey, we don't agree with this. I'm in the wine industry. I think you should be able to enjoy a glass of wine every once in a while and not have to think too hard about it. But that being said, if you're trying to make conscious decisions about your health and well-being, you should probably be interested in what you're actually putting in your body, right? And if you can't get that information from XY, whatever winery you're buying your wine from, that's a red flag. It's a red flag. They need to be transparent. We as an industry need to be more transparent. In seeing this news come out that the EU, which again is far more strict than the FDA is, I think that's great news. I think it's great news. And I think there are going to be a few producers, maybe like Ridge, maybe like ourselves, that are the early adopters of this here in the States. And frankly, I think it's going to give us a huge leg up. Again, this is something, this has been my soapbox for years. And for the longest time, we've talked about it here and there, in tastings in the cave, amongst colleagues. It has not been out in the open. And it is time for this to just be out in the open. I can't tell you how many folks that come out to the winery now, and these are the conversations we have. It's almost every single time. It is rare that we don't bring up this conversation about, the things that can be utilized in wine and whether or not we or anyone else uses them. And the question that I wish I could answer that I never can. So many of you out there have asked me this, and I wish it's something that I could answer, but I just can't. The question is, how do we know if a winery is using this stuff? How do we know if it's a heavily processed, manufactured wine with a lot of additives and other stuff in it? How do we know when we're at a restaurant, when we're in a wine shop, how can we tell? And I don't know. You can't. You just can't. And that's a damn shame. It's a damn shame. And it's a disservice to those of you who support us to not make that information available. And the wine industry needs to do better. The fact that many businesses kind of fight, scratch, and claw to make this not a thing, there's plenty of lobbyist type groups that try and prevent this kind of stuff from, happening. Some of you might remember, I think this was late 90s, early 2000s, speaking of some of the fast food examples I gave, there was a huge court battle on whether or not fast food restaurants needed to publicly post calorie counts and have, their table of contents readily available for customers. And the fast food industry lost. They had to start posting all this information. This is on the heels of like stuff like Super Size Me and things of that nature. But we're still a fast food nation. They're still killing it. They're still doing all right. Maybe they've taken a bit of a hit after the fact, after something like Super Size Me or that court ruling, but it doesn't seem to be the case. The lines in every drive-through down in Napa seem to be pretty busy. Except for KFC. No one likes KFC in Napa. Not really a thing. In-N-Out, though, I mean, come on. In-N-Out, Taco Bell, there's always a line. There's always a line. I think this is one of those moments. I do think that this is one of those moments that this is an adapt and overcome. You know, folks are starting to clamor for this information. You see governments starting to require this and make a point of saying, like, hey, we got to know what's going in here. The more we fight this change as an industry, the worse we're going to look. So we might as well jump on board while this train is moving slow before we don't have a chance to grab on. This is a problem. It's a problem. And luckily, I think the solution is easy. It's very easy. Very easy. Because guess what? Us winemakers, if we're doing our job in the first place, we have to keep these records anyway. We have to have, if we get audited, we have to be able to say, hey, here's everything I did to create this wine. Here's where the grapes came from. Here were the barrels we used. Here are the different lots. Here's what we blended. Here's this additive, that additive. If you're using any of this stuff, you're typically keeping track of it. Because legally, you should be. I'm pretty sure you have to be. So you already got the information. And you might not want to have to put a QR code on your back label. You might not want to have to put a table of contents on your back label. But you might as well have that information posted somewhere so that when someone comes a knocking, that's not just a consumer, but a government agency that says, hey, we're going to start making you do this. You got to let everybody know what's what in this wine. You can flip the switch and just say, all right, we're already good to go. We're already doing it. We're fine. It's just, I don't see the point in not doing this anymore. You know, there's a time where I might be looking through the industry at these rose colored glasses, thinking like these additives, these extracts, these things were, you know, hardly ever used, if at all, if they were even available. Winemakers who really gave a shit wouldn't use them because they were honest and they were artists and they wanted to create the best wine that Mother Nature could provide to them over the course of that growing season. And maybe I'm just wrong. You know, I mean, the way winemaking is taught is certainly as a wine manufacturing method. You don't necessarily learn the artistry, but you learn how to balance the equation. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem. I don't know. Maybe there's too much of a focus on the lab work and not so much on the practical work. And hey, it's almost like that Jurassic Park thing. It's like you got so excited that you could that you didn't think whether or not you should, however that goes, right? And now you're just patenting it and selling it. That's where it feels like the wine industry has gone in the last 20 years for me. It seems like it's a little bit more disingenuous because of a lot of these things that are utilized in the dark corners of cellars, not just here in Napa, but everywhere around the world. And it's refreshing to see some progress in what I think is the right direction of letting you all know what the hell's actually going on when it comes to making wine. All right, that's my soapbox for the day. I hope that you take a look at that FAQ. I also put a link in there for in the description about what wine additives are actually approved by the EU. If you want to take a deep dive into some of this stuff, it's some heavy reading because it's a lot of government agency type, you know, jargon and whatnot. So it's obnoxious to read, but, you know, if you're interested, it is interesting. And be sure, if you haven't had a chance, you can check out our additive episode from last year. You can also check out my thoughts on some of these additives, some of which actually I don't have. This is might surprise you. I don't have a problem with some of them. And the reason is because, like I said, I still love fast food every once in a while. Shoot, give me some hot Cheetos every once in a while. I eat, like, it's not like I don't eat processed things or consume processed things every once in a while. I try and do less and less of it every day if I can. You know, but you know, if you see fit as a winemaker to use some of these things, that's fine. Have at it. You can. It's a free country. Do what you want to do. But don't pretend for a second that you're higher than thou because you're in the wine industry. You're just making a Big Mac, my friend. That's all you're doing. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Wind Up Podcast. This is a topic that always gets me fired up. There is certainly more to come on this. We're going to do a kind of a review of some of these additives and dive a little deeper into that pool coming up. So I hope you'll tune in for that episode. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. Remember, we're most active on the Instagram and the YouTube. That's where you can find your more regular updates on the show. You can also head to our website to sign up for our newsletter. That's mtgawines.com. And don't forget to slide into our DMs or submit questions for our end of the month Q&A. We do that the last week of every month. We submit some of the favorite questions. We just pull them out of the hat and say, all right, let's try and answer as many as we can in about this, you know, 35, 45 minute time frame, and we have at it. So it's a lot of fun. Love doing it. So kicking off the month strong here. I love you guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been the Wind Up Podcast. We will see you next week. Cheers.